don't want to sound like this repetitive cliche, but as I look at some of these Black Friday deals for TVs, I'm just amazed at how much cheaper TVs are than they were even a year ago. And I feel like I said that last year and the year and the year before. And it just blows my mind, largely, especially the types of TVs. And one of the things I've always remembered when, with Ben Forrester, Forrester Tech, and Luke Davis, they said, because I would always ask, what TVs are good TVs? And they always said the three S's, Sharp, Sony, and Samsung. Those are you can always guarantee.
Okay.
And so I'm sure there are other places with good deals, but I don't know. I heard a Best Buy ad or something, and so I thought I looked. A Samsung 75-inch.
Okay, that's a big TV.
That's a big TV. $749.
Wow.
4K.
Wow.
Not a 1080p, a 4K TV, and then a 70-inch for $549. So, and I said, and I'm using them as an example. I'm sure that other, there are plenty others as well. But that is, so I have a 75-inch, but I have a huge wall, so it fits
sure,
it.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you, that is a very big TV, and that you can get a 4K Samsung for $750 at 75-inch or 75 inches. That's just crazy.
It's amazing.
To me.
I was thinking about getting my dad a. Because he doesn't have a HD television, but he loves watching sports on TV.
Oh.
And I'm thinking, I could get him like even a 50-inch TV, and I bet you I could probably get it for just a few $100s.
Probably trade a snack cake for it. I mean, as cheap as they are anymore. And people, they don't really recognize, a lot of people, the difference between, they say HD and regular or even 4K. But I'm telling you, if you have a bigger TV, it does make a difference.
Sure.
And we were watching recorded episodes or on demand of that Anthony Bourdain show. What the one abroad, something abroad. I've never really watched that show that much, but mm-hmm. my wife does. And so we were watching it the other day, and she made the comment. She said, "Now this is a show, and that's not even 4K." But she said, "This is a show that definitely you want to watch on this TV because there's a lot of landscape and everything." But with the big TVs, you can really tell a tremendous difference. And to be able to, get a 4K TV, 75 inches, with one of the leading, brands, for that sort, it's just amazing.
It's amazing.
I mean, it is.
Because the prices have just gone down and down, I guess. But more people have those in their homes now, don't they?
Well, sure.
They? So,
yeah,
it's becoming pretty commonplace.
Evil capitalism. It's awful.
A woman who brought an unknown substance into the Christian County Courthouse, causing two deputies to become ill, has pleaded not guilty in her first court appearance. Rebecca Hucker was charged with felony drug possession after bringing in what she says was meth into the courthouse. Hucker told investigators it was not cut with any other drugs, but the substance is still being tested. Those two deputies were taken to the hospital after finding the substance in Hucker's purse. The whole building had to be evacuated. Two parents are facing charges after police in Rolla discovered a four-month-old baby sustained about 18 broken bones. Police arresting Sean Crawl and Hannah Crawl, charging each of them with two counts of abuse or neglect of a child. Investigators say the broken bones are across various parts of the body and the injuries are consistent with inflicted trauma. And Missouri Senator Roy Blunt and Western Missouri Congresswoman Vicki Hartz are speaking out against the NCAA's ruling penalizing the University of Missouri's athletic program. The school reported itself to the NCAA when they found out about a tutor at the university who admitted to helping student athletes by completing assignments and helping those kids pass courses several years ago. Hartzler says the NCAA's decision will hurt student athletes, also block revenue for college athletics, and more. We have the statements from both Senator Roy Blunt and Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler at KSGF.com. And that is the latest news.
KTTS First Alert Forecast, sponsored by St. Clair of the Ozarks Home Improvements. Discounts for veterans, firefighters, police officers, and EMTs. The wind... wind warning, that's gone. No need to worry about that. There is a wind advisory, though. So be advised, not warned, but be advised for areas east of 65 until noon. Could be gusts up to 45 miles per hour. So that's nothing to sneeze at. Sunny today, 46 for a high. Cloudy, 33 tonight. Tomorrow, Thanksgiving rain with a high of 40 and showers on Friday, 50. We are looking for a high of 64 on Saturday. So could feel a little nice there. It's 33 and it is sunny. A1 Custom Car Care. This time of the year, people are trying to set a little money aside for presents. And for a lot of folks, if you have any vehicle maintenance that needs to be done, particularly if it's unexpected and it's preventing you from, you know, driving to work to get money, that can be very problematic. It can be very stressful. Some time ago, A1 Custom Car Care noticed that there was a portion of the population that maybe didn't have the best credit, and so they had to resort to means of borrowing money that is not seen as financially advantageous in any way, shape, or form. You know, maybe taking out loans that are seen as not wise at all. And so they wanted to offer an alternative, and that is one of the offerings that they do have. You don't have to have the best credit in the world, and if you do have a vehicle and you need that work done and you cannot wait, but at the same time you just don't have the money, particularly for Christmas, talk to them about the options. It may not be for you, but it may be for you. It may be an absolute lifesaver. It's just an option that they provide to you at A1 Custom Car Care. Fort and Sunshine, Springfield, Highway 60, Republican West Sunset, across from Classic Rock Coffee. That's A1 Custom Car Care. Most stories that come out for a reason. Journalism on a national level today, when it comes to politics and sometimes even beyond, it's motive-driven journalism. In other words, the motivation isn't, what's going on? Let's let people know about it. But it is, this is our version of the world. This is what needs to happen. So we are going to craft the information in a way that best lets the people of America understand that that's the direction we need to go. Understanding this made these next two stories of interest to me. Number one, Obama reportedly told a Democrat candidate that Joe Biden, quote, really doesn't have a bond with voters. A new report on former President Barack Obama suggests the former president doesn't have faith in Joe Biden's chances. Politico's Ryan Lizer reported on the 2020 Democratic candidate who met Obama at his office in D.C. this year, seeking his advice on how to win the White House. Liza reported for Politico that as Obama provided advice to candidates who met with him, it also gave him a chance to learn about them so he and his advisors can figure out who is the most likely person to defeat Donald Trump. Here are some of Obama's biggest takeaways so far from the Politico piece. Or let me rephrase that. Sounds a little misleading. As written in the Politico piece, here are some of Obama's biggest takeaways so far. Sometimes he offers candid advice about his visitors' strengths and weaknesses with several lesser-known candidates, according to people who have talked to him or been briefed on his meetings. He was blunt about the challenges of breaking out of a large pack. His advice is not always heeded. He told Patrick earlier this year that that would be Deval Patrick. Got a great story on him before the show's over, by the way. He told Patrick earlier this year that it was likely too late for him to secure money and talent if he jumped into the race. Occasionally, he can be cutting with one candidate. He pointed out that during his own 2008 campaign, he had an intimate bond with the electorate, especially in Iowa, that he no longer has. Then he added, and you know who really doesn't have it? Joe Biden. Story number two. This in The Hill. Obama privately said he would speak up to stop Bernie Sanders. Oh. Let's see here. Former president reportedly said if Bernie Sanders held a strong lead in the Democratic primary, he would speak out to prevent him from becoming the nominee. Close advisor to Obama telling Politico he could not confirm whether Obama would stand up against Sanders. The advisor saying he hasn't said that directly to me. The only reason I'm hesitating at all is because, yeah, if Bernie were running away with it, I think maybe we would have to say something, but I don't think that's likely. It's not happening. An Obama spokesperson, when asked about his previous comments on Sanders, referred to the president's past comments that he would back whomever became the Democratic nominee. Look, we have a field of very accomplished, very serious and passionate and smart people who have a history of public service. Whoever emerges from the primary process, I will work my tail off to make sure that they are the next president, Obama said earlier this month. He has stayed quiet throughout the campaign so far, a close advisor telling Politico, I can't even imagine with the field how bad it would have to be for him to say something, referring to Obama speaking out against the candidate, despite reports that Obama has said that he would. Now, either of these stories could be inaccurate. Whether it is accurate or inaccurate, it was put out there for a reason. And what would that be? I know some this would be the D. Wampler perspective and some others, that this is about a Michelle Obama run. That Obama is trying to tear down the front runners, Joe Biden being one of them. Bernie Sanders is not really in front-runner status and hasn't been for some time, that he's trying to break them down for Michelle to run. Now, others may think he has his eye on someone like Buttigieg. And with Buttigieg surging to the second-place poll, and I think it's either Iowa or the new national poll, that this is part of Obama's effort to help clear the way. Whatever the reason, there are quotes being given to political outlets where Obama is you know, secretly saying this, secretly saying that. Now, I happen to believe there's a missing element to all these stories, and that missing element is the fact that Obama isn't necessarily going to be a help. There is this assumption that's being made by the media and this sort of unspoken conventional wisdom that Obama is going to be this huge help. I don't know if you've noticed, but a lot of the sniping that has been occurring amongst the Democrats is sniping over Barack Obama's policies. One of Joe Biden's biggest criticisms that he is receiving right now is regarding the Obama administration's policies on immigration. You know, Obama was locking kids up. Obama was deporting people. All of the things that Trump is called a Nazi for, is called Hitler for. And while the focus hasn't been so much on Obama's past sins when it comes to immigration, now that Biden is in the race and you have a lot of other Democrats that want to take him down, they're beginning to notice this. They're beginning to point it out. And so I don't know that the Obama legacy is something that Americans want. So this breathless wonder as to who will Obama support? Will he come out and support that much needed support? I don't really think that it's going to do for a candidate what they think it's going to do. Now, I mentioned Deval Patrick. Deval Patrick is the former Massachusetts governor. And there was anticipation he would announce his run, and he did announce that he is running for president of the United States. He's a Democrat. This guy's a real humdinger, let me tell you. I want to share a story with you. He's come under a little bit of criticism, and it's not profoundly loud. One, because it deals with rape, and he's a Democrat, so the media is not going to cover it so much. But he's also not some sort of front runner. Democrats don't even know who he is. But this story involving him, his brother-in-law, his sister, and rape, I say you won't believe it. You're going to be like, who? What is wrong with this guy? So that next, I'm Nick Reed. Deval Patrick, Democrat candidate for president, former Massachusetts governor, calls his sister's rape a relapse during a New Hampshire campaign stop. So here's the story. Deval Patrick has what has been considered in the past a troubled record regarding sexual assault and crimes against women. 1993, Patrick's brother-in-law pled guilty to spousal rape of Patrick's own sister. So, Deval Patrick has a sister. Her husband rapes her. He pleads guilty to it. Spent 4 months in a California prison. He gets out. The couple reunites. And they move to Deval Patrick's Massachusetts, where he's governor. During the heat of the 2006 campaign, the Boston Herald broke the news of the rape and the fact that his brother-in-law, the rapist, had not registered as a sex offender. Now, it's Massachusetts, so it's very heavily Democrat. Despite what some might see this as a bit of a scandal, Patrick easily won election. A hearing officer for the Sex Offender Registry Board later determined that Patrick's brother-in-law wasn't required to register as a sex offender because the state didn't have a spousal rape law like the one he'd been convicted under in California. So in California, you rape anyone, your wife or otherwise, you go to jail, it's bad. In Massachusetts, they're like, well, you know, we don't really have a law that says that's bad. So he doesn't need to register as a sex offender. As you can imagine, advocates for sexual assault victims were outraged. Victims advocate Lori Myers said at the time, have we not learned anything from the NFL? Rape is rape. It doesn't matter if it's your spouse or not. If the governor agrees with this, then he needs to personally apologize to every woman in the state. Two women at the Sex Offender Registry Board, Chairwoman Sandra Edwards and Executive Director Gina Holmes, agreed with that. And so they tried to force Deval Patrick's brother-in-law to register. Instead, in 2014, Patrick kicked them off the board over their treatment of his poor rapist brother-in-law. Patrick said at the time, that hearing did involve my brother-in-law. That's true. We've never made a secret of that, but it's still inappropriate. 3 years later, Deval Patrick's brother-in-law rapes Deval's Patrick's sister again. This past June, he was sentenced to 6 to 8 years in prison for rape and kidnapping. Patrick telling the New Hampshire Journal on Monday at a campaign event when he was asked, you know, you have any regrets for, like, you know, firing people to keep your brother-in-law from registering as a sex offender? You know, particularly given that he raped your own sister. And he said, quote, no, I don't have any regrets. He went on to say he, talking about his brother-in-law, the rapist, he brought a lot of pain to our family, but I also respect that at the time he and my sister had a few decades of reconciliation. Obviously, that did not last. I stuck up for him then because he was respectful of my sister, and I think it was the right thing to do. As for the subsequent rape, Patrick said, quote, it turns out he had a relapse. A relapse. Patrick's description of his sister's rape as a relapse brought an immediate rebuke from Wendy Murphy, a former prosecutor who teaches sexual violence law at New England's law school in Massachusetts. Quote, that is such an insulting way to describe what rape is. Rape isn't a disease or a medical issue. It's an act of violence. Calling it a relapse decriminalizes the concept of rape, and it's an attitude that contributes to the high rates of violence against women. Now, where is the media all over this? You've got the New Hampshire newspaper that wrote about it because they asked and they quoted him in it. This is one of the Democrat candidates for president of the United States. And he's not some, this isn't some guy that, you know, is just some activist and he's like, I'm going to run for president. This is the former governor of Massachusetts. Governor of Massachusetts. And no outrage. Where are the protests from Democrat activists? Where is the media outrage as they threw that outrage at, I don't know, a guy by the name of Todd Akin? when he was talking about when the issue of rape and the difference between if somebody was legitimately raped or, you know, whatever. And, I mean, that guy, the media did not talk to a single Republican without asking them whether they denounced Todd Akin's response to that. And here's a Democrat, former governor of Massachusetts, who's running for president of the United States, and I don't seem to notice any interest. I mean, aside from the fact that you bent over backwards, that he apparently bent over backwards to protect the man who raped his own sister, fired the two people, women nonetheless, who attempted to force him to register as a sex offender, then when he rapes his sister again, says, well, he had a relapse. You know, these things happen. That's just, I don't really know what, it's just odd, strange, bizarre, twisted. I mean, I fully recognize we all have different perspectives, but every so often you come across something you think, what on earth? This happens to be one of those instances. So we'll see how many of the Democrat presidential candidates, many of his opponents, are asked to weigh in on this. I suspect the answer will rhyme with none. Here's Bailey with traffic. I'm Nick Reed. Don Luzader with the latest news update.
And good morning. There's a chance some of us could wake up on Thanksgiving morning to a light wintry mix of freezing rain and snow.
What?
Well, you know, just kind of adds to the holiday spirit, right? The National Weather Service says the main potential impacts, especially north of Springfield from this, will be to bridges and overpasses. However, it's all going to be changing over to rain by mid to late morning, and tomorrow's going to be one of those rainy, cold Thanksgiving days, and the rain, of course, is going to continue on Friday as well. Baby girl has died from injuries she suffered in a crash involving a tow truck and pedestrians last weekend in Lebanon. Police say Aaliyah Day was in a stroller. One-year-old Mariah Taylor and her unborn child also died in the crash on Highway 64. The driver told police he could not see the family in time to stop. And that is the latest news.
The KTTS First Alert forecast sponsored by Anchor Tactical Supply. Wind advisory areas east of 65 until noon with gusts up to 45 miles per hour. Sunny, 46 for the day. Tonight, cloudy, 33. Thanksgiving, rain, 40 for a high, and Friday showers, high of 50. And then, of course, Don mentioning that potential for the wintry mix upon waking up on Thanksgiving. Now, Friday, we will not be at Norma's Carriage House. It's going to be a best of programming. So tomorrow and Friday, there will be best of. I just wanted to give you that little programming note. Now, they'll be open both days, so should you want some delicious lunch or breakfast, of course, you can stop by there, but just be aware we will not be there. All right, let's see. Which of these stories now? I just have a lot of stories. A lot of stories here. This is a bit of a fun one where Republicans apparently outmaneuvered Democrats in Arkansas. Democratic Party of Arkansas. Now, Senator Tom Cotton, you may recognize that name. He is the Republican senator from Arkansas, and he is up for re-election. And so the Democrats had selected their guy by the name of Joshua Mahoney. Well, evidently, Republicans, whether it's Cotton's team or otherwise, had a lot of information on Mahoney that was the sort of information that would make it very, very difficult to run a challenging race, a formidable race. Now, what do you do with that information? Like somebody, you know, okay, they filed and they're going to run, and so you're like, oh, we're going to release this information, right? Well, here's what they did. They waited until after the deadline for people to run expired. Now, why would you do that? Well, you would do that so that the Democrats can't scramble and find an alternative, right? Now, there is an exception in Arkansas. if you do, and I don't think this is a federal exception. I think that this is an Arkansas exception, where if this scenario occurs, but your inability to run after that deadline approaches and passes, your inability to run is due to health reasons, there is an exception that allows for the party to put someone else on the ballot. But that doesn't appear to be the case here. At one point, it seemed as if maybe that was the case, but they've really gotten to the point where Democrats are not going to have anybody on the ballot. He withdrew. He pulled off. According to an announcement by the Democrat Party, they wrote, after exhaustive and careful examination with our legal counsel and our party leaders, and without additional information from Mr. Mahoney, that's the Democrat, the Democrat Party of Arkansas will not be able to field a candidate for United States Senate. This is according to Chairman Michael John Gray. The narrow legal window to replace Mr. Mahoney as our nominee would require evidence that he has not provided to us publicly or privately. So what they're indicating here is they're saying, you know, the narrow legal exception in which we could replace him, one of serious health issues, he has not provided us any information privately. He has not publicly indicated that there's any sort of health issues here. So we're just saying, and we ain't going to be able to put anybody on the ballot. Publicly, Mahoney's reason for dropping out of the race, cited in his tweet and in a subsequent letter from his lawyer, was family health concerns. So the party set up a meeting with Mahoney to see if they could, you know, if that could allow for the replacement, but then he was a no-show at the meeting. The real reason he dropped out of the race, according to, well, all reports, that Republicans had dug up damaging information, which they sat on until just moments after that filing deadline passed. Senator Cotton's campaign manager described the plan in the memo to Cotton supporters that was obtained by the Arkansas Democrat Gazette last week. The memo read, Republican opposition research discovered, quote, significant vulnerabilities in Mahoney's background, but sat on the information until Tuesday's candidate filing deadline had passed, according to a memo Wednesday, this from departing Cotton campaign manager Brian Colas, that was addressed to Senator Cotton's top supporters. Minutes after the filing ended, the state Republican Party announced that it would file a complaint with the FEC accusing Mahoney of lying on campaign-related federal paperwork. The National Republican Senatorial Committee, meanwhile, questioned the challenger's work history, tweeting that Democrat Mahoney had been, quote, unable to remember the last time he was employed, end quote. Also, other damaging material that has not been made public was in the hands of reporters, Colas wrote in the memo. Here's what the GOP bombardment looked like, according to hotair.com. The link goes to a press release which quotes a story from the Democrat Gazette in which Mahoney could not remember the last time he'd worked full time. That was at odds with his frequent claims that he was a small business owner. In fact, it appears Mahoney didn't even own a small business despite claiming he did on official forms. The GOP called for an FEC investigation. No one, at least publicly, seems to know what the other damaging material is. So what we do know here is the Democrats put forth Mahoney as a challenger, and that Republicans recognize that this guy, they had evidence that they believe indicated he lied on federal paperwork, which is a pretty big deal, and other information they're not releasing. But instead of going public with it, they waited until the deadline passed, then went public with it, knowing Democrats could not replace him on the ballot. That's pretty clever stuff. Got to hand it to him. Pretty clever. Clever, clever, clever. Don Carricker, I want a great homeloan.com because you do. If you've ever been through the process of looking for a new home, one of the things that you know you must do first, if you're going to do it wisely, is to secure letter that says, oh yeah, you are pre-qualified for this loan. This is the reason being, if you haven't been through this process, somebody owns a home and anybody can come along and be like, yeah, I'll give you what you want. And you're like, can they really? But they say, oh, look, I've already been pre-qualified. You know, they're serious. They've already done their due diligence. They've done their work, that they're not just sort of window shopping for homes on a Sunday from 2 to 4. And they on a whim get excited and think, yeah, but then come Monday when they go to the bank and they, well, we don't want to move after all, you know, that sort of thing. The way you get started on doing that is by going to iwantagreathomeloan.com. You're going to enter some very basic information, and then someone from Don's team is going to get back with you, and within 24 hours, after you give some additional information to them, you can be pre-qualified for a number of different options, and then you are set to go. By the way, that part of the process doesn't cost you anything. iwantagreathomeloan.com, because you do. As top 2020 Democratic candidates unveil plans to curb or reverse the spread of charter schools, many Black and Latino voters are asking why their voices aren't being heard, according to a New York Times report. As a single mom with 2 jobs and 5 hustles, I'm just feeling kind of desperate, Sonia Tyler told the New York Times. They're brilliant. They're curious. It's not fair. Why shouldn't I have a choice? Talking about her children. Tyler is seeking to enroll her children in a suburban charter school outside Atlanta, joining many other parents who have found in charters a lifeline to escape failing public schools. But Senator Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders have put out plans to defund charters, while South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg and former Vice President Joe Biden have both publicly expressed skepticism about charters. In front of the studio that held the Democratic presidential debate in Atlanta last week, more than 300 school choice proponents chanted, "Our children, our choice," and held up signs such as "Charter schools equal self-determination" and "Black Democrats want charters." The next day, charter school parents disrupted Warren's speech on racial inequalities at Clark Atlanta University with similar chants, and a Black mother even confronted her about whether Warren sent her children to private school. Warren said she had sent her children to public school but failed to mention her son attended an elite private school from 5th grade to 6th grade to 7th to 8th to 9th to 10th junior senior year. Sanders has argued that the charter schools that African Americans so desperately want are just a ploy to privatize education, a sentiment echoed by Warren in her public opposition to any federal funding for the schools to give inner city youths the option. Both proposed dramatically increasing funding instead for the public schools in order to achieve what they say will be better educational outcomes. Now, instinctually, I want to say if Trump is smart, but I know he is, I would like to see him in some of these cities being a champion of this cause. Total champion. Wait until the general election. I mean, there's no need to do it now. We talked about two polls yesterday, Emerson and Rasmussen poll, both showing that amongst likely African-American voters, 34% to 35.5% support for Donald Trump, which is mind-blowing for a Republican president. If you have a general election against one of these individuals that are against the charter schools, Donald Trump going into the inner cities, being surrounded by these African-American families and their children cheering him on against an Elizabeth Warren or Bernie Sanders who want to send their kids to the private schools, have the choice because they have money, but when it comes to the inner city Black, nope, don't think so. You'll go where we tell you to go. This is one of those issues that Republicans have been on the winning side of for the African-American community. But because they've written off the African-American vote as, well, they'll never vote for us anyway, they've never gone out there and actually spoken to the African-American community in a proactive way about this issue. So Democrats have been able to get away with siding with the union side of education, who they do not want this because it's competition, and they believe what will happen is they will lose out. And you will have parents pulling their kids out of those schools and putting them into what they view as more successful schools, and this will be problematic for them. If people are actually allowed to choose whether or not to send their kids to their schools, they have to perform better, and they don't want that. But because this has never actually been made into a campaign issue, that has allowed Democrats not to have to choose one side or the other, because everyone's like, well, black people are going to vote Democrat. So screw them when it comes to the education issue. Screw them when it comes to the school choice issue. They're going to vote for us anyway. They don't even know where we necessarily stand on this because nobody's talking about it. But Trump can talk about it. And something is already happening where during this primary caucus season that there are hundreds of black activists that are out there that are protesting this, you know, this particular issue in favor of having choice and protesting against people like Elizabeth Warren. So the temperature's there. The grassroots effort already exists. Here's what Trump has always been good at. Trump has been good at recognizing where there is a grassroots feeling, a grassroots passion, a grassroots effort, and attaching himself to it. You know, the misunderstanding that occurs is that, for example, when it comes to fake news, that people don't trust the media because of Trump. No, Trump recognized that most Americans don't trust the media, and he attached himself to that. The media wants to convince themselves that all of this wall stuff and border security is just Trump whipping people into a frenzy. No, Donald Trump recognized that people want that sort of security, and so he attached himself to it and fought that cause, became a champion of that cause. People feel that, the elites that when it comes to NAFTA and these trade issues, that people have all of a sudden begun concerning themselves with it because Donald Trump made it some sort of issue. Once again, Donald Trump recognized that for a lot of particularly blue-collar people, this was an issue that they did care about but no one addressed. So he attached himself to it, made himself a champion of it. This charter school issue, the school choice issue, is one that there appears to already be within the African American a very strong sentiment, a grassroots passion for it. And given Donald Trump's ability to recognize what is important to average people and become a champion of it, gives me, I don't know if hope is the right word, I guess it is hope, that he's going to do the same thing that he's been so good at before in tapping into what is important to average Americans. And I'm telling you, if what the polls have already shown with him moving the needle as far as he has within the African American community, running with this issue, that is going to make a tremendous difference. And let me tell you, if he were loud enough about it and got enough other loud support on this, I am not overestimating my belief that he could potentially, I'm not saying it would happen, but it wouldn't shock me if he got 50% of the African-American vote. Springfield's News Talk FM, 104.1 KSGF. I'm Nick Reed. Happy birthday to Bobby Lilly today. I want to make one other comment here on this issue of charter schools and and this grassroots effort in some of the inner cities by the African-American community to push that issue, and what I believe is a fantastic opportunity for Donald Trump to capitalize on the increasing support amongst the African-American community here. What must not happen is a getting in the weeds as to whether or not charter schools are successful. Because that will be the approach from the Elizabeth Warrens and the Bernie Sanders, and try and point out, and it could be cherry-picked, all of the bad evidence regarding charter schools. And then what happens is it becomes an argument over whether charter schools are good or not. What needs to happen is this is just a discussion as to whether or not black people get a choice, or the white politicians decide for them. That's how the debate needs to be framed. Not whether charter schools are better, worse, not statistics, not any of that stuff. That's very academic. That's very boring. It needs to be about choice. And whether or not white politicians think black people should have the choice to decide where to send their kids for an education. Tomorrow is going to be best of programming. I hope everyone takes an opportunity to be thankful for the blessings that you have. Also, Friday will be best of, so that means I'll be back Monday. Glenn Beck's coming up next. I'm Nick Reed.